This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome to the Pixel People Podcast, where we go beyond the quest lines to discover the backstories and motivations of our favorite video game NPCs to better understand them and ourselves. I'm Amelia, also known as Fire Rider, and each episode I'm chatting with a special guest about a character they find particularly interesting. Since we're taking a close look at how these characters impact the story, please be aware that spoilers are likely. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, so before we dive in, I just wanted to share with you real quick that I now have a Patreon. I have no plans to include corporate advertising on the show, so if you'd like to support what I'm doing here, I hope you'll check it out. I've got some great rewards at every level, including, for Tier 2 and Tier 3 subscribers, an invitation to record and send me your thoughts about a character I've covered on the show to be included in a future episode. Check it out at patreon.com/firerider, and you can find the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for being a listener. On with the show. Welcome to Pixel People. I'm Amelia, aka Fire Rider, and I am thrilled to introduce today's guest. Her ladyship, Jessica Starr, is a bon vivant of the highest order. Amongst her many projects, she's proud to be part of the Fallout Feed and Dames Who Game podcasts. She also helps run the United Wastelanders Network and appears on various streams when she can, most notably with the Elgato Pub. She loves virtual photography, the occasional YouTube video, and when not working on one of these things, long walks along the Toxic Valley, Nordhagen Beach, or perhaps along the parapets of Val Royo. Jessica Starr, welcome to the show.
So happy to be here, Fire Rider.
So happy to have you.
Love the intro. You know, Val Royo might be most appropriate for where we're going today, but honestly, the Toxic Valley this time of year, gorgeous.
That's what Beckett says anyway.
And he would know. I mean, he, like me, usually has a drink or two before said stroll, but yes.
But he's not complaining about the robot, but what are you going to do? So tell me, though, we are not talking Fallout today. Who is it that we are talking about?
So let me preface this by saying this is kind of odd for me because I spend the majority of my life, I am a Bethesda stan. And if it's not Elder Scrolls, it's Fallout or vice versa, mostly. But today we are delving into Thedas, into the world of Dragon Age, discussing Alistair Thearn.
Alistair.
Yes, a character very close to my heart. Also the name of my closest companion, IRL, which would be my pug, Alistair.
Love it.
Entirely coincidental? No.
So I've been playing through Dragon Age. We're getting towards the end now, heading into endgame. I have thoroughly romanced Alistair.
Like, oh, have you really? So I have seen enough of your playthrough to know that. I've caught maybe two of your Dragon Age streams so far.
But they get very thirsty very quickly.
Yes. Well, you know, in a time of war and strife and darkspawn, the blood boils.
Indeed.
The heart wants what it wants before it's too late. No, absolutely. That's great. When we had talked about this ahead and I mentioned, you know, either Leliana or Alistair, and you're like, I'm getting to know Alistair. I'm like, okay, I didn't realize you were getting to know him.
Oh, I'm definitely getting to know him. I have gotten to know him. And that was delightful. He is such an interesting character too. He's one of those that you really have to take the time to kind of figure him out a little bit, even though on surface he appears very when you first meet him, there's like a shallowness to him, it seems. But then as you play through the game and talk to him, and you, especially when you listen to him interact with other characters too, I love the interactions between the party members. They just, It's like, no matter what I'm doing, I have to stop and just like hold everything and just listen.
Now, this is your first, not to interrupt your thought, but that is a hallmark of all the Dragon Age games. So you're going to continue to enjoy that more and more and more. And when you get to Inquisition, oh my God, mix and match, threesomes, foursomes, it's a fantastic time.
Funny you mentioned threesomes because I was informed of a special trick that you could do when you got your coercion high enough.
With Isabella?
And I have corrupted that boy.
I mean, all in the name of love, right?
What's that?
I mean, all in the name of love. It's a, of course, it's one cabin, of course, one night. You know, the boat was rocking and so was the room. Totally. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, Alistair, he had no idea what he was getting into when he met me.
Well, and it's interesting because Isabella becomes a larger character as you go on, which I'm sure people have mentioned to you. No spoilers, but yeah, she seemed like just a one-off, one-night kind of deal to help you learn to be a duelist if you went that route in the game. But no, there's a lot more to it.
Oh, very cool. So, and spoilers are okay. I'll go ahead and I've got it right in the intro of the show. Like, we're talking characters and story. Spoilers are going to happen. Sorry.
No, that's fair.
So, spoil away. I'm fine with it.
Well, I'll try to do that for you because, if anything, when your first experience of a Dragon Age game, and I say first experience because multiple playthroughs tend to happen once you really get into it to see the other characters and arcs and choices. Definitely. But that one, it's nice to be somewhat pristine, somewhat virginal going into it. So before we get into Alistair himself, I should say that I do feel a little bit as though this character and Dragon Age in general is maybe, I may not be the best choice to discuss it, although I'm passionate about it, but Dragon Age. Okay, so Origins I've played. I mean, I've done all six Origin stories. I've done three complete playthroughs. And of course, I played Awakenings to Inquisition, and I've done multiple on those too. Except for Inquisition, I've only played once. But trust me, I played the ever-living heck out of it.
Yeah, I tend to be very thorough in my playthroughs of most games. Like, if there is a place to go through and check, I will go through and check.
But it's been about 5 years for me. So since I finished Inquisition, I haven't gone back to replay. Well, I played all the DLC, of course, so that was a little bit after. But so I may be slightly rusty on some of this, and yet Alistair, I love him. He is my first Dragon Age romance.
Love it.
So in all the playthroughs, he was my first, and it's a tale of both love and tragedy, as we'll come to find out.
That's, yeah, and that's where a lot of that character complexity comes in. You know, when he's been so funny from the get-go, he has so many hilarious lines that just completely crack me up. When you come into my streams, you'll probably hear Swooping is Bad played multiple times.
It is
so bizarre and hilarious.
It undeniably is, in context or out of context. Nobody likes swooping. Unless there's a hug attached.
There's a card in, I don't know if you've ever played Cards Against Humanity, but there's a card in there that simply says swooping. And I never got it until now. I'm like, oh, swooping.
Yeah, Cards tries to be universally applicable. So you can use it, you know, many different ways. But there are some references in there for sure.
Speaking of which,
you ever get any custom cards?
Oh, I've got like a variety of the different packs from, I think I've got like a PAX pack or something like that that has like, it has a bunch of, I've got a Mass Effect pack too.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, so I have, you know, I have the bigger, blacker box. I've got the first five expansions, but for Christmas, I got my husband a couple of cards made up for him specially. So we've got a card that specifically says James Butt.
There are cards in there with my name on them that I think I got through like one of the Christmas sets or something like that.
That's it.
I'd have to dig through because I can't remember exactly what they say, but I know that like one is like, here lies insert my name, my full name.
Nothing
born blah blah blah, died of blah blah blah.
Nothing makes other players happier than to toss your name down into an awkward situation. Take such great joy in
it. Oh yes. This is very true. So when you were starting, like going back to the beginning of your Dragon Age experience, what was it about Alistair? Why'd you romance him?
Well, Alistair is your principal companion in the game, as far as who he is. You know, he is really your first companion, unless you're playing the human noble playthrough, in which case you get your loyal Mabari straight away. You know, thank goodness. And goodness knows, I love that Mabari, but I like Alistair more, whatever Morrigan thinks. So what drew me to him? I had quick identification. He's a sympathetic character. He's an anchor for you in the story. He mixes and hides his vulnerability with wit and sarcasm. So his humor was attractive, his engagement, and the fact that he was in many ways a stand-in for asking the questions you wanted to know and then explaining the answers to you as you go. Yeah. You know, a proxy for the audience, as it were, especially at the beginning, because he's your first companion. Mm-hmm. So all of that made me like him. And then ultimately, he's adorable, he's intelligent, and reliable.
And it's funny that you say intelligent, because I think that that's a lot of, it's overlooked a lot, even within fandom, I've noticed. I see a lot of people, you know, referring to him as like, you know, a himbo or whatever, which implies that he's kind of dumb.
Specifically why I mentioned intelligent.
Yeah, and I'm glad you did.
People overlook it. And yeah. It bugs the heck out of me. You're not that witty if you're not smart. And what? Having an idealistic view of the world, having that kind of rose-colored outlook does not reduce your intelligence, which is also something I very strongly identify with. And we might get to identification later. But yeah, Alistair is full of it, and it doesn't make him any less smart. Maybe even less wise.
I think that's really the difference there. Maybe he isn't super wise to the ways of the world. Although, as you play through the game, he definitely becomes so. And sometimes in not necessarily positive ways. And he also reveals like a lot of like biases, kind of, that maybe he's not taken the time to question. I'm playing as an elf, and I understand that is going to make things challenging soon based on where I'm at in the game. And there's some specific things I need to do so that he doesn't dump me on my ass.
Depending upon what you realistically want to happen, yes, mm-hmm. Be prepared.
Yeah. So, you know, so I know what I am going to do. I know what ending with Alistair I'm going for here. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm setting the groundwork for that. And so I can get that to happen with a lot of guidance from people who have played the game and know what the heck they're doing. Shout out to Rancid Dwarf. Thank you.
Yes, big shout out to Rancid Dwarf.
Big shout
really
out.
Enjoyed their input in your stream and sometimes things they post about Dragon Age. Yeah. Huge Dragon Age fan, I love. Because like I said, I am and have not been spending as much time in that world lately.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been great. But it's also, you know, it brings up questions about, you know, parts of Alistair that aren't quite so sweet, you know, and I want to get into some of those later on.
Before we get there, do you want to cover for the audience kind of who Alistair is in the story?
Thank you.
Like his actual lore background?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Let me just go over it then. I have a few notes here that I've kind of put together from memory. I didn't check the wiki ahead, so hopefully this is mostly correct. But Alistair, before you meet him, he is and this is to be revealed later in the show, he's a bastard. He is the bastard son of the former king, which mm-hmm. is something you know for most of the game, but it's there as part of his past, and he knows the entire time. There are things he doesn't know, such as who his mother is. Mm-hmm. He thinks his mother was a serving girl, and he was a bastard son of this woman, who isn't named, I don't believe, ever, and Merrick, the former king. However, in truth, his mother was an elf Fiona, an elven mage. Which I don't think this comes up at all in Dragon Age. It is from one of the earlier books.
Okay. Yep. I remember seeing it and being told that and going, oh. and that complicates things, especially given some of his views on elves and mages.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and a lot of it is, you know, cultural, societal views.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he himself as a character works to kind of transcend and suppress that. But there are, you know, assumptions and microaggressions, as I'm sure you've noticed playing an elf.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Raised by nobility, Arl Eamon specifically. So Arl Eamon is the brother of former King Merrick. And Arl, kind of like a Jarl in Skyrim, for those who need a touchstone, you know, rules a section of land or a hold. He was raised there, and he at some point was told about his parentage. I don't know when. I don't think it was right away, obviously. But the thing is, it was a very well-kept secret. Even his stepmother didn't know, the Arlessa. Around 10, he was sent to train with the Templars. Part of the reason why, having a bastard child around the court, his stepmother, the Arlessa, I'm forgetting her name right now, but she became jealous a little bit, was worried that with having her firstborn, that Alistair would challenge his right to the hold and royalty, stuff like that. Also, I mean, you know, he was a kid. He was acting out a little bit. He was Alistair. And so, yeah, Templar. He wasn't exactly, I mean, he believes in the Maker, which is the general religion in Thedas. Mm-hmm. And so Templars are essentially, like the name suggests, royal knights of a sort. And so Templars are the Knights of Andraste, which is Andraste, kind of, let's just say the Jesus figure for, yeah, for this compared to the Maker. So he's there from about 10 until 18, 17, 18 or so before he takes his vows. And that's when Duncan from the Grey Wardens, and the Grey Wardens, I won't get into everything about this because there's a lot of backstory here.
Yeah.
But the Grey Wardens are essentially a group specifically developed to safeguard and fight Darkspawn, which are some of the evil in the realm. If you, in the context of the Lord of the Rings, think of Darkspawn as the orcs and the Uruk-hai. You know, mm-hmm, they are created by Sauron, or in this case, Archdemon. And the Grey Warden standing against him. So he's recruited into this order. Now, Duncan knew his father, Merrick, actually knows his mother. And so he has been checking in on Alistair off and on, recruits Alistair and the Grey Wardens. And this is where Alistair is. He's been with the Wardens for a year, maybe two. And this is when the game begins. So in Origins, you meet him in Ostagar. And Ostagar is the first location after you finish your specific origin for your character. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, the Origins aspect, how wonderful is that?
Oh, so great. And I love that, you know, it's like so many different options for starting, and then it's going to trail with you through the rest of the game. And you just don't see that very often. It's usually, you know, the same start over and over and over again. So the fact that you can mix and match it in so many different ways is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a lot, big part of the BioWare I love. Yeah. You know, not just choice and consequence, but choice and flavor.
Yes.
You know, fact that where you've come from influences your interactions with others throughout the game. Yeah. It may not change the world, but it changes relationships. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's part of BioWare games.
Well, it gives you that nice replayability too. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, the fact that I can start this completely over, and instead of playing my Dalish warrior, I can start over with a dwarf mage, well, not a mage, but a dwarf whatever, you know, or a, uh-huh, or a noble mage, or, you know, something like that. That just and have a completely different experience.
So for purposes of our discussion of Alistair and my first and second playthrough with him, I was human noble origin. Okay, mm-hmm. So she was Kusland. So I believe my first character was Jillian Kusland.
Okay.
Yep, Jillian Kusland. And she fell for Alistair. And so basically you meet him in Ostagar, and he, like I said, is your gateway into the Dragon Age universe. You identify with him, and my character immediately liked him. Well, okay, I immediately liked him. Character followed.
As so often happens.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I mean, we may be the power behind the character, power behind the throne, whatever it is. So you, Dragon Age is interesting because in the first game especially, it's a bit of a tactics game as much as it is an action mm-hmm. game, an RPG. It's mm-hmm. very, the first Mass Effect, the first Dragon Age, they are RPG-ass RPGs, even though mm-hmm. BioWare starts introducing cutscenes and a lot of stuff to really draw you into the story compared to their earlier yeah. games.
That was what initially made it difficult for me to get into those games, was that I really struggled, especially with Dragon Age, with the tactics. Like, that did not, it also probably makes a difference that I was playing on an Xbox and not a PC. And I think that, number one, having folks to kind of help me through that part, to kind of, you know, give me advice and recommendations, and, you know, and from there, you know, I kind of figured it out and did my own thing with that. But also to encourage me to keep going when I got frustrated. And
does help. Yes.
Yeah.
Your streaming yeah. community with you to encourage you.
Absolutely.
It's funny, like watching you play Undertale the other day.
When I'm ready to like check the thing through there. It's like, I love this game, but the controls make me crazy sometimes.
But that being said, the Xbox version is actually easier than the PC version in some ways. I played okay. them all exclusively on Xbox. I've never played any Dragon Age on PC.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And the default difficulty, a normal difficulty on PC is harder than on Xbox. That's a known fact.
I'll be the first to tell you, I turned that difficulty down. I was like, yep. I'm here to enjoy the game. I do not want to fight and get frustrated with the controls the entire time. Just whatever. You know, it's still challenging on easy mode.
Yes, it is.
You know,
it's a challenging thing. There is no baby-ass baby mode in Dragon Age. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. You have to rely on tactics mode quite a bit. Mm-hmm. For the when playing on PC, the computer aspect, they really wanted to channel KOTOR, but even more so, you know, Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, the earlier games, and kind of bridge the two.
Yeah. I think I was hearing or reading somewhere that it was kind of intended to be sort of a spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, which I played Baldur's Gate second. I didn't touch Neverwinter Nights. I played a ton of, like 2001, just before I got into Morrowind. But I hadn't played any of the other classic BioWare games, you know, Icewind Dale, Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, which is, you know, one of the greatest games, Planescape Torment. I have gone back and played them with widescreen mods and stuff like that in the last 10 years. And they are pretty fantastic, especially Baldur's Gate 2. But they don't hold a candle to Dragon Age anyway. IMO.
Fair enough. So when you were going through, what did you decide to do with Alistair at the end? Did you crown him?
Okay. So, getting to the end. Just quickly along the way, you know, I'll say I brought him with me all the time. So
he's part of my dream team.
Yep. He confessed who he was. We're going to Redcliffe. So I heard from his own lips, not from Arleman. I learned a lot about his history with Gul'dana, which his half-sister Gul'dana, who is not his half-sister, but he thinks is because he doesn't know his actual mother and thinks her mother was his mother, but she's not. And who knows and who said and whatever. But he wants to connect with her. Did you do that yet? Have you hardened him or unhardened him?
I believe he has been hardened.
Okay. Hey, nice. We're not talking about that night again. We're not talking about, you know. So if you harden him after meeting Gul'dana, it doesn't go well. You know, she turns out to be a bit of a gold digger. Yeah. You know, she's like, yeah, no, I don't want anything to do with you. Your father pressed himself upon my mother, which not his mother anyway, this is all made up. But, you know, this is the way she sees it if it happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, if you want to do anything for me, just give me some money and get the fuck out of here. Pardon my language. But she is rude AF.
Yeah.
So to harden him, you afterwards, he's very upset about this, of course, because this is a family member. He's built this up in his mind. He wants to meet someone warm, loving, that, well, someone kind of like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Not, you know, and some of that makes sense. You know, she's not in the best circumstances and not happy. And so she puts that on him. But to harden him, you basically tell him, you know what, stand up for yourself. Accept that things are as they are. You can't change it. You have to plan for the worst. You have to accept that a lot of times people aren't going to go your way, and you make your own fate. You're in charge of your own fate, which, you know, that is a good lesson.
Yeah. Hard Excellent advice Alex. In any context.
And the way it's worded on the dialogue tree makes it a little bit hard to choose, but that is probably the choice you want to make under most circumstances, because you might be hardening him, but he's still Alistair either way.
Yes, yeah.
If you don't harden him, basically you say, you know what? Stay who you are. You're a beautiful flower. I mean, that's not exactly what they say, but, you know, you're a beautiful flower. Stay true to your outlook, to yourself. You know, continue to think of others before yourself, because what you do is good and beautiful. And honestly, I agree with the latter sentiment in many ways, but he is more of a doormat than he should be in a lot of these situations. Mm-hmm. So stiffening that spine just a little is probably a good thing.
Well, I think that's an interesting distinction there too, is the difference between being vulnerable and being a doormat. Because he is very vulnerable throughout the whole way. He has no problem, you know, crying in front of you, which, you know, good for him. You know, love me a guy who shows emotions, right?
Absolutely.
But you don't want it to be to the point where a person is completely spineless. And I think that sometimes, especially when we're talking about, you know, like toxic masculinity culture, that distinction gets lost, where anytime a masculine figure shows that vulnerability, they become treated as if they are being a doormat. You know what I mean?
And it certainly is not the case. You can be vulnerable, open, empathetic, hope for the best in people, and not be a doormat. You know, I feel that's very important. To go kind of back to why I identify with Alistair, beyond what drew me to him. My tagline in life is tragically optimistic. I came up with that in my early 20s. And it's true, because I'm an idealist and I'm attracted to idealists in life and in games. You know, stand for something. Stand for something, have a vision, but hopefully a good one. And Alistair has the same kind of thing. He is not blind. He does see things as they are, but he's got those rose-colored glasses. He's optimistic. He hopes that he can connect with most everyone he meets, and he hopes that they can have the best outcome from everything. I mean, that hope is important. You know, if Liliana represents faith in the game, and Morrigan represents realism or cynicism, he represents optimism and connecting with other people. You know, so maybe hope as opposed to Liliana's faith.
Oh, I love that. When we talked, I talked previously about Morrigan on a previous episode.
And, loved it, by the way.
Oh, thank you. So, yeah, so you remember we talked kind of about the concept of self-reliance and kind of played with, you know, where the line is on that, where self-reliance becomes toxic and, you know, where it's necessary and trying to find the balance between that. And I think you could draw that same sort of idea here if we're looking at like hope and optimism. And there is such a thing as like toxic positivity, you know what I mean? Where you're just like relentlessly positive, regardless of the situation, to the point where it makes people uncomfortable.
In the face of facts.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And that's something that I have occasionally been accused of. Another reason why I identify with Alistair. But I work hard not to go that direction. You know what I mean? You can look at things from an optimistic viewpoint without being toxically positive, without ignoring the truth of what people are going through and their place.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it's like there's a lot of nuance to finding that line. And because, you know, in my own life, I have a tendency to like in my public persona, if you will, I have a tendency to not talk about the negative stuff because, you know, it's negative. I don't want to bring people down. I don't want to. And this kind of going back to yet another episode, Toon and I, when we talked about Vivek, we talked about public perception. And one of the things that we kind of delved into with that is how you present yourself online and the perception that you give of people and how it tends to be kind of the highlight reel, right? But at the same time, that can come back and bite you in the ass. And I got a big lesson in that recently when, without getting into too many details about my own private life, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on for a really long time, and I just didn't talk about it. I didn't want to burden other people with it. I didn't want to feel like I was constantly complaining. I didn't want, you know, there were just so many reasons. But then when, you know, situations shift and people don't have that context, you get a lot of really uncomfortable questions.
Right. They can say, wait, why did this change so quickly from this to this? And you're like, well, it was gradual.
Exactly.
It was shades, yet I didn't want to share that because until it hits a certain threshold, is it really for public consumption? No, it's for close friends. And there are circles and layers on social media and such. I agree with the highlight reel thing. There are times when you do need to share, though, you know, vulnerability. I don't like to ever share negativity if possible. You know, I don't engage in drama when it happens unless I really feel there's something got to take a stand on, in which case, yes, because as an idealist, I will take a stand. You know, vulnerability and struggles, it's important to share those, I think, with people.
Yeah, and I think I do have like a certain amount of idealism myself that in a certain ways I kind of have to keep it in check. I think sometimes maybe, you know, get a little too idealistic about things. It's kind of like, okay, let's look at the reality of things. But, you know, I like to think that I've got a fairly decent blend of idealism and realism, or I don't think those two are even opposing, to be honest.
No, they're not. That's just if they don't have to be. You know, one is hashtag goals, the other is hashtag plight or hashtag look all around. Yes.
Yeah. And I am you know, very vulnerable around people that I'm close to. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's complicated when you are somebody who's you know, very active in a slightly more public manner to determine where those lines fall for yourself. and how much of that you want to share and how vulnerable you want to be to people who don't necessarily know you very well.
That's definitely something we all have to decide as we go. And sometimes we might overstep or misstep and pull back. But yeah, toxic positivity. I don't feel Alistair often goes there. He deflects with humor more.
And very much my own defense mechanism.
Better humor than you know, just whitewashing everything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you were talking about the ending and where we go. So after you harden or don't harden him, let's talk about A Tale of Two Playthroughs. Mm-hmm. So Jessica, Jillian Cousland, very into Alistair. We do the things. We get to the Landsmeet. We have not hardened Alistair. We made choices based on our heart way more than possibly any pragmatism at all. Very much to Morgan's disapproval, of course.
Oh, you know? Morgan hates me. Oh my God.
It was my first playthrough. We're talking like, you know, this is like 2009, whenever it came out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a little younger then too. and let's say I was very much in the throes of idealism constantly. But so, you know, I'm always like, no, it should be like this. Always the good choice. Always the right choice. So we got to the Landsmeet. And while I tried to stoke Alistair, I decided to spare Logan at the end during the Landsmeet, which you haven't gotten to that yet, have you?
Mm-mm, I'm right before it.
Okay. So Landsmeet has so many possible changes and diversions. But mm-hmm. let's just say if you choose not to kill Logan when stuff comes to a head, and I know you've looked at a little bit of this ahead to help mm-hmm. control your playthrough, mm-hmm. Alistair feels incredibly betrayed. Mm-hmm. And he will, well, I mean, he can go a couple of ways, but in my case, I managed to convince Honora to spare his life after he threw a hissy, rightfully so, in retrospect, you know, and goes off and kind of hasn't heard from again, I mean, until technically Dragon Age 2, even in this ending, and becomes a drunk. But at the time, all you know is, Alistair just wanders off, he becomes a drunk, he's wandering wherever, you know, he feels betrayed by all his values and his love, okay? Mm-hmm. Not really a good place to be. So. Yeah. Jess goes through this, and I now have Logan as a Grey Warden because he's forced to go through the joining as part of this and to work with me. But I am depressed. I am hating myself. I am so unhappy with this playthrough. But I play through the game. I finish it. There's a time towards the end where you can make certain choices to have happen. I'm like, no, no, dog. I went in to fight the Archdemon, and I was just nihilistic enough that I basically sacrificed myself. I'm like, this is all I deserve. I can save the world because I couldn't save my love. And it was so depressing for me the last 15, 20 hours of the game because I'm not a fast player. I don't play quickly. At least 10 hours. So I'm like, I need to fix this. This is horrible. So I go back and I start from about two areas in. So I have, order I do things is Ostagar, Lothering, a circle, the Dalish, then Redcliff, and then I'm pretty sure that order. No, I did Redcliff next. So I start from basically at Redcliff. So I still have to do the Dalish. I have to do Ashes, you know, Ashes of Andraste, all mm-hmm. that Sacred Ashes. Have to go back into Orzammar. So I still have like over half the game to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to redo this. I'm going to fix this and I'm going to make better choices. So I go through, I harden Alistair. I still play a lot the same, but somewhat different, you know, and I understand we're doing better here. So we get to this point. I do not spare Logan. I have hardened Alistair. He is going to be king, and I'm going to marry him. We go through with this. We get to the dark ritual with Morrigan, and I'm like, yeah, Alistair, I I keep it from him a little bit about what's up, you know, but yeah, we go through, and he does what he needs to do, so we both survive. I'm so happy. We kill the Archdemon. The end of my game mess up. After I kill the Archdemon and I go to the final cutscenes, Alistair is marrying Honora and my warden is dead. God. I never got my happy ending after two playthroughs and so much stress.
That's what I'm trying to go for here, is that happy ending. So, you know, I'm getting, okay, you have to do this. You have to do this. Now you have to do this, you know? So I'm going, okay, so Honora is going to be queen. Alistair cannot kill Logan. I can't remember what the rest are, but that I know that those so that I can get my happy ending. But that also opens up a little bit of a can of worms there because, you know, I'm an elf. So I can't make him king if I want the happy ending with Alistair because he can't be king, or he can't have an elf as queen, which is.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even though he can take what he wants if he's been hardened, which you have done, at best you could hope to be a king's consort.
Yeah. Which.
I mean, you know, one for casual, one for best. You don't want to be second fiddle.
I deserve better than that.
Agreed. You certainly do. And so did I. God, I was so angry by my first couple playthroughs of Dragon Age by the end. I had to share my pain with somebody after all these years.
I feel it.
Hey guys, as you know, I'm part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, and I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to a couple of other great Rocket Club shows you'll want to check out.
Long gone are the days where people sing about West Virginia as almost heaven. After nuclear war and disease, it's far from heaven now. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story podcast, is a tale of survival, conflict, and hope set in the Fallout 76 game world. Join our survivors on their journey to reach that almost heaven once more. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, and many other great podcasting apps. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story, available now.
Fellow survivors, Vault 76ers, patriotic Americans, this is Lieutenant Colonel Valeria of the New Enclave. Follow our stories as our cast of characters emerge from the White Springs bunker to face an uncertain future in an Appalachia overrun with monsters. But as I always say, the wasteland isn't going to tame itself. Join us here on the Modus Files. We can be found on any Enclave-sanctioned network, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and more. Keep your Pip-Boys handy and listen for further instructions. Valeria out.
Hello there. This is Mr. Tittles, coming to invite you to join us on the Call of Cthulhu Mythos Mysteries, a live play Call of Cthulhu podcast where we explore the dark, dangerous, and mysterious aspects of the mythos. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon, and wherever you get your podcasts. Hope to see you soon.
But that also kind of, that does open up the, you know, the conversation about some of Alistair, some of his more problematic aspects, which, yes, are part of, you know, the society and how he was raised, you know. But, you know, there's a touch there of some racism. And if you contrast this situation, you had brought up Lord of the Rings before, and I'll bring up Lord of the Rings again. So in Lord of the Rings, you have Aragorn marrying Arwen and kind of, you know, merging those two kingdoms, you know, as much as you can. Right. And here it's like there's an opportunity to do so, except that opportunity is never explored because Alistair just doesn't quite have the
gumption to do it. Even if you harden him, it's a mix of cojones, obligation, and societal norms. And let's be honest, for Ferelden is a bit strict, and is a dark fantasy. This is not a feel-good fantasy, and BioWare was not looking for good outcomes that made everybody happy. Mm-hmm. They were looking for outcomes that fit within the world they created, and that's a hard one.
Well, that's something you saw a lot in Mass Effect, too. Like, there's no happy ending.
You know? I mean, yes and no.
Endings that are kind of like, okay.
There are happy things along the journey.
Characters, there's no happy ending, and there's no way to resolve some of these situations without losing big one way or the other.
I agree with that in general, and certainly the very ending, whether the original or the repaired ending on 3, None of them are happy endings for sure. But you can get characters some of the arcs they deserve and some happy endings.
Yes. Yes. And you know, so just in the previous episode, we were talking about Morden. And, you know, we were talking about there is a way to keep him alive if you follow this very specific, you know, but it's not the right arc.
It's not the right arc.
It's not how it should have ended. Like, that's how it needed to end. Whether, you know, you sit there sobbing about it or not.
You're making me cry already. I mean, it is so true. It's not how it should be. And that exactly quotes his line. It had to be me. I mean, yeah,
I'm gonna lose it again. My God.
How right can he be?
I'm a mess.
No. I'm wearing eyeliner today, woman. It's streaking. Okay.
Yeah, I can't wear any eye makeup while I'm doing this. I'll just
But yeah, Morden is a great character. Of the scientist Salarian of the first degree.
Yes, absolutely. Oh. But you know, kind of going back there to the situation in Ferelden and the situation that Alistair is put in, if you make him king, you know, and maybe this is my own idealism coming out, you know, the only way to change a situation is try to think this through, because it's very, you know, kind of tricky and complicated situation. But when you have a group of people who are being stepped on for, you know, a range of reasons, while yes, you know, there's work to be done on every side, but ultimately the people in power have to be willing at some point. Somebody in power has to step up and take that moment, use their privilege to make those changes. And there's such a missed opportunity here for Alistair to be the one to do that.
That's very true. That's very true. I mean, you know, he can work. They normalize the Grey Wardens more within Ferelden. He can make some changes as time goes on. But yeah, he's not taking it back right away. The rallying cry against oppression is often, you know, take it back. But it's still up to government in some ways to capitulate unless you go full-scale revolution.
Right.
And Alistair isn't willing to do that. Definitely not. That's not who he is. Even if you harden him, his actual core beliefs, he's not ready to do that himself. I mean, it's just not who he is.
Yeah. And, you know, and there were other, it's interesting because, you know, there was one time where I was, you know, playing the game, and then I raided another stream, and we were talking about, you know, when I came in, you know, hey, oh, you're playing Dragon Age, you know, who you romance? Oh, Alistair, you know, and somebody jumps on that immediately. And it's just like, he's a racist. And it was just like, whoa.
okay,
slow down. Let's talk about this.
It's funny because I did not see that myself in my playthroughs, but that's, you know, that's a point of privilege from a PC too, because I have played in my canon playthrough was with a human mage from the circle, male in that case, which, by the way, his name was Lex. I designed him to look exactly like Lex Luthor from Smallville. Perfect likeness. Really happy with that one. And that's actually my canon playthrough because I was so angry about my first two.
Fair enough.
And we romanced Lily out of there, and it was all good. But I have not been in a situation to feel that from Alistair directly, although I have seen it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the argument with Ashley from Mass Effect, which I have gone into long defenses of Ashley on Reddit and elsewhere because Ashley has prejudices. She is racist in the idea of her initial feelings, and yet she actively works against it, doesn't let it inform her actions as much as possible, although goodness knows she slips at first. You know, she does have these issues, but she wants to be better, and you can help her be better. And people often misquote her most common line, which if someone ever talks about Ashley, I'd love to have some input in that on the show, because Ashley is another great character who I think gets the short end of the stick.
Okay. Cool.
Did you keep Ashley or Caden in Mass Effect, BT Dubs?
So I never played Mass Effect 1. I jumped straight into Mass Effect 2.
What
I know.
The muffin?
When the legend, I know. Well, because I was trying to get immediately to understand Legion. But once Legendary Condition, Legendary Edition comes out, I am going to be starting from, and then that was the thing. It was like, if that wasn't coming out, I would have gone ahead and probably started a fresh new playthrough right there and then. But with it coming out, I'm waiting so that I can, you know, experience.
That's wonderful. I've been waiting for my replay through for Legendary Edition forever. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm so I started out with Kaden, just by that's who happened, who they gave me. I had no Rex and I had Kaden.
Did you do the comic ahead to kind of decide some of your previous game choices?
I did, but I didn't really know what I was deciding.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that makes good sense. So yeah. The thing with Kaden, I mean, to talk about romanceable NPCs and such, I had a thing where with my husband, I would often, a little bit of jealousy there. Okay, yeah, I romanced Alistair. But with Kaden, his voice was too sexy. And I felt a little bit of infidelity of romancing Kaden.
Oh, interesting.
So he had to go.
Okay.
This was when I was first engaged and, you know, maybe in that kind of stage. But yeah, I'm just like, oh, yeah, you are too sexy, boy. No, we are not going here.
That is so funny. Managed to dodge that particular pitfall in my romances. It helps that I tend to go for the monster boys, you know.
Except yeah.
Alistair is like the exception to that particular rule.
such a pretty boy. Well, I mean, I tend to go for the tragic as well. You'll get there, but Dragon Age 2, I'm an Anders girl, and okay. Inquisition, I'm a soulless mancer. So I love my tragic idealists, like nonstop. And once you get to know them, you'll understand.
give me a bad boy with a martyr complex, and I'm all over that.
For me, it's not
in
so
game,
much bad
in game.
Boy.
Let me just
right, no, for
clarify
sure.
that for anybody who's like,
I don't
going,
love the
really?
Bad boys. Okay. I prefer the paladins, but you know, if they have to break the rules, they can be chaotic good. That's okay.
Chaotic good is lovely. Love me some chaotic good. One of the other things about Alistair that it almost caught me off guard a little bit. So this happened when I was in Orzammar. So my dream team that went with me for the majority of the game has been Alistair, Liliana, and Wynn. And I did have to break up the dream team and trade in Alistair for Shale when we were doing the Deep Roads, just so I could live through it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, so but up until I hit the Deep Roads, I had Alistair with me. And there's a point where I can't remember the exact line, but you're in Orzammar and you go into kind of this like the slums. There's a name for it and I've forgotten that now too. I just played it not that long ago and now I'm like I don't know.
Wait till you do those origins. It'll stick with you more then. Like, all the origins are wonderful, you know, and only about 2 hours apiece. Well worth doing.
Oh, that's good to know. Mm-hmm. So we went into these slums, and he starts saying something about, like, this is where we keep all the poor people, or something like that. It was just something very, like...
Super classist from Alistair?
Super classist.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was just like, I was like, wait, did he really say that? You know, and it was... What I appreciated about him saying that is that the stream actually turned into a conversation on classism. So, you know, it's not just goofy thirst in my streams. We have some pretty serious, intense conversations.
As an occasional viewer, I can completely support that. Goodness knows, I love your community. Some of them I know, some of them I don't, but I always enjoy interacting with them because very insightful, very clever and creative. Yes, thirsty, but also ready to, you know, discuss and call people on their bullshit.
Yeah.
So
I love
all of that.
We do. So it was, you know, kind of thinking about how, you know, Alistair was raised and the experiences that he had. I guess it wasn't surprising necessarily to hear it, but thinking about the character as a person, it was, if that makes sense.
Right. No, as a product of his upbringing, okay, that makes sense. You know, he came from a life of privilege. He's had it hard, certainly life as a Grey Warden, and as a, you know, the junior person in the Templars hasn't been easy, but still very privileged overall. And so his background, it lays into that perfectly. But mm-hmm. who he is empathetic and sympathetic. And you wouldn't expect him to be judging the poor like that.
It did not come across in that moment, like, at all. It was so judgy and so negative and cruel to a certain point. And it was just kind of like, Who are you and what have you done with Alistair?
I wonder if it was supposed to be, ironic or supposed to be funny. Like, I don't know what the response
It did not
was.
Come across as funny at all. Ironic is a possibility. It's not how it hit me. It hit me as almost a statement of, or if it was intended to be humorous, it didn't land.
Right. When I say humorous, I'm thinking sardonic. I'm thinking as in judging actually the caste system of the dwarves, saying, oh, and here's where we keep the poors. I.e.
Oh, that's a good thought.
I don't approve
yeah.
of this, but apparently this is how this society works. Yeah.
And that is how that society works, which is a whole thing.
Yeah, the caste system among dwarves is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really interesting to kind of work through and explore and think about, you know, because there's a lot of parallels to society in that, even if, you know, we don't have it as clearly delineated. It's not actually like set in stone. It's not, these are the rules. They're kind of the unspoken rules.
Yes. So you have a lot of this yet to come in your playthrough, and I'm super excited because Landsmeet is like the nexus for so many choices from there, and there's still plenty after. Oh my goodness. And this is your first playthrough of Dragon Age Origins. Mm-hmm. I'm so thrilled for you. You know, after my game series order goes Elder Scrolls, Fallout, Mass Effect, Dragon Age, Mass Effect, nobody knows, Fable. And I do put Elder Scrolls before Fallout, which may seem amazing to some people because I live and love in Fallout. But Elder Scrolls was my first love, you know, coming up and discovering RPGs. I came into the series with Morrowind, and I have lived there as much as Fallout, for sure.
Yeah, and I missed a lot of that particular time period the first time through. You know, I played a lot of growing up, you know, we had an SNES and I played, we start out with an Atari, but when we're talking about RPGs, this is kind of where it really begins. You know, so Final Fantasy was a big thing for me. And then, you know, and that kind of continued as I was, you know, through my teenage years and so forth. But then like kind of as I got into my 20s, my life got really weird, you know, and I didn't have as much time for playing as I would have liked. And, you know, I couldn't really afford to keep myself in games or anything like that. And then I didn't really get back into gaming until 2006-ish.
Okay. Good time. That's when Oblivion released.
I missed it, though, because I was playing WoW.
Oh, wow. I stayed away from MMOs.
That was a good plan.
Yes, I know myself. It is very important. And I would hear people talking about Ultima Online and EverQuest and then WoW. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, Danger Zone. Oh, Jess, do not follow this thread because you have a band. You have a life. You want to do these things. And so I did not until Lord of the Rings Online captured me in about 2009. But that's when I finally gave into the MMO itch. And since then, I've usually had at least one going.
Yeah, so, you know, between 2006 and, like, 2011, I was singular focus. It was all WoW all the time. Well, not all the time. I mean, I still, you know, worked and had kids and stuff. I still had some sort of semblance of a life. But, you know, I was in a guild. And I was raiding and I was doing all these things. And then in a lot of things suddenly changed in 2011 for me. And I couldn't make that kind of commitment to a game anymore. That was just not something I could justify. But luckily, right around that time, what released in 2011? Skyrim. And the rest is history.
Absolutely. No, I had a, you know, similar trajectory from 2003 to about 2008 were my lean years where I was way more excited to go out to the club than sit and play games, although I did play Oblivion still because the addiction was real. That I loved it. But then I got my Xbox to play Oblivion on Xbox. I played on PC initially. Mm-hmm. And to play Dragon Age, which was just releasing soon, and to play Mass Effect. And people need to remember Mass Effect was an Xbox exclusive. And
I didn't know
at
that.
The time. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yep, for the first year it was Xbox exclusive. And then it came to other platforms.
Okay.
Same with Oblivion. Oblivion launched as an Xbox exclusive.
I didn't
People
know that either.
Talk about the
That's
Bethesda.
That's so funny. Yeah,
Microsoft
I'm like everybody's flipping out about it right now, and I'm like,
they have such a huge history. Morrowind, PC and Xbox. Oblivion, PC and Xbox. Until it came out on Sony. And then, of course, yes, with Skyrim, they went multi-platform. Fallout 3, I don't remember if it was exclusive for a period of time. I feel like it may have been, but it was shorter, if so. And then you look at mods and stuff like that. There has always been a very connected relationship between the two and great communication. And it makes perfect sense that they're working together going forward. Now, the fact that they're back to true exclusivity, most likely, with Starfield and possibly other games, I do feel for my Sony fans, but as an Xbox girl myself, specifically because of my love of Oblivion and Mass Effect and Bethesda, this is why I bought into the console. You know, was their relationship with
solve that problem by getting one of each.
Oh, problem solved. Yeah, no.
And I've moved pretty much everything over to PC at this point anyway, so you know, I'm still playing 76 on PS4, but that's, or PS5 actually, but that's the only thing I'm really playing on there at this point. Everything else is on PC.
Yeah. Makes sense. I love PC. My background, I built my first PC in high school. I actually fried the motherboard using an electric screwdriver, but that's a whole nother story. My dad was very unhappy that we bought a new motherboard.
Oh no.
It was like a 386, you know, I tried. But I loved PC, and it was Xbox that once I got into Xbox, I became a console gamer. I still try to always have a gaming PC, use it for video editing, podcasting, streaming, all the good things. But man, Xbox and that high gravity couch, I tell you, I love my couch.
I love it. Oh man. So do you think, are you going to go back anytime soon and replay Origins?
I waited to replay Mass Effect until Legendary Edition because I knew it was going to come someday, and I was beating that drum a lot last year, and I was really glad when they announced it. I will replay Dragon Age Origins for sure on the Series X, which is what I'm playing on now primarily. I don't know that I'll do it soon, but I have a feeling that after I finish the Mass Effect Legendary Edition playthrough, depending on 76 content, I may be in 76 just for streams. And if that's the case, I mean, obviously, I play for fun, too, but it's been only one day a week lately because I'm in there enough for streams and other things that I want to do in the game. After that, I will probably add my second game as Dragon Age. Yes.
Yes. Nice.
Yes. Yeah. I miss it.
Think you're going to romance Alistair again? You're going to go for somebody else?
That's a really hard question. You know what? Could I finally could I finally get the true romance I tried so hard for? Wow. Yeah, I say my canon is my mage with Liliana. And it was, but if I could reclaim my beautiful, bright, and shining boy, yes. Yeah, I think, okay, Fire, you just helped me decide. It's going to happen.
You know, I love that, you know, even as you're calling him, you know, the beautiful, bright, and shining boy, I love that he is so flawed. To me, that's so critical in making a character interesting and making them real. I don't think I've ever really enjoyed a character anywhere who doesn't have those layers of complexity and those flaws that you can really dig into and kind of
question. I've never been one to dig a Mary Sue. I mean, if they're the main character, maybe, but I'm not going to be into them as a, you know, potential companion or love interest or whatever. I'm excited to see where you take your playthrough. I know you know where you want to take it or plan to take it. I'm excited to see where it goes. I will try to tune in for a lot of this. It's good to see him again. You know, that reintroduction. Yeah. Devin played Origins a couple months ago. You're playing Origins now. It's been whetting the appetite.
Yeah.
I've got so much Fallout that I'm delving into. But I definitely want to go back there. So I'm going to watch the end of year playthrough.
I love it when I'm playing something and somebody comes back to me later and it's like, oh, I just started playing such and such again because I was watching your stream. I just got one of those last night where somebody was like, yes, I just got back into Skyrim. And I was like, yes.
Isn't that fun? Yeah, I have a lot of people that have been encouraging to play, you know, go back to Fallout 4 again because we've been spending so much time on it in the podcast recently.
Yeah.
But I do want to mention for Alistair, future games.
Yes.
He is not a character you're done with. In fact, he is the only character that I believe appears in all future games and content. You can actually.
So I have a question about them, because just kind of looking, you know, through Wiki and stuff like that, I was kind of under the impression that he'd only stick around if you made him king. Is that not accurate?
That is not accurate.
Okay, so I misunderstood that.
In Awakening, you may only see him if you're king. As far as I remember, if he's king, I think you only see him that way in Awakening. Mm-hmm. But in Dragon Age 2, you can meet him either as a Grey Warden or a king. He's an active Grey Warden investigating some things in Dragon Age 2. Forget the name of the city all of a sudden. But he is there. If he's a king, he will actually make an appearance. He will talk about amnesty and bringing back some of the people who had to leave on an exodus, because your character, Hawk, in Dragon Age 2 was part of Lothering. So you remember Lothering, one of the first cities you go to after Ostagar.
Yeah.
They were part of the exodus, and they actually found shelter in Kirkwall. That's the name of the city. He comes there to say, hey, we want to let you guys come back, you know, bring some of the refugees back and all that. And he also argues with Knight Commander Meredith of the Templars there, because it was a Templar background. He's very unhappy with how she's handling the mage situation in the city, which is the central conflict.
Okay.
Dragon Age 2 and Inquisition. So he's there. And then also, if he even if he lives as a drunk and leaves you and you're incredibly upset and sad, Ban Tegan, which you've met, Ban Tegan works for Arl Eamon. Mm-hmm. Ban Tegan will actually find him in one of the bars, and you get a scene where he kind of brings him home.
Oh.
Gets him back into the wardens, helps him recover, which it helped my heart.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, oh thank God I didn't doom this poor boy to a life of suffering.
And even in Inquisition, you can meet him whether he's a Grey Warden or king. So I won't get into the specifics, but they're true to the character in all cases. And if you did romance him, that's referenced very well, whether king or Grey Warden. So they keep that thread alive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. See, I'm after going from Mass Effect 2 to Mass Effect 3, I'm now very sketch about meeting previous characters. I'm just like, what are you going to do to my heart?
Yeah.
So, no, that's good. I'm looking forward to seeing him again, for sure.
So we talked a bit about your community and how much I love them. And, you know, I love stopping by. I just want to mention again that I have really enjoyed my interactions with them. And thank you for inviting me on this podcast.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad that you came on and that you brought our dear sweet Alistair to talk about.
Talking about community, I also love the way they latched on to our companion Super Bowl. So you may remember back in January or so.
Oh, I remember.
So
I rallied them troops.
One of my shows is the Fallout Feed. It's a podcast. And Kenny, who is a listener, but he does regular polls, and we sometimes talk about it on the show. He's been a guest a few times. He said, I want to do a companion Super Bowl. So he started putting out the characters, this person versus this person, in brackets and such. And as I recall, on show, it actually happened during the show.
I may have had assistance in this
regard.
Yes, you
had a lot of assistance in this regard, and it was beautiful. So we were doing the show, and I noticed that Hancock was losing, and I'm not sure if it was to dog meat or who it was, but he was losing pretty badly. And I'm like, this isn't right. We need someone to stand up for Hancock. I know who. Number one Gula herself, Firebreaker. So Andrew, one of the hosts, you know, just kind of put it out there in the feed, a message you tagged you, and you took that ball and you ran with it to the end zone.
I may have had assistance from a certain voice actor in that regard too. So
yeah,
there was a lot of rallying that went on.
Danny was great. Goodness, he jumped in to, you know, to help his character. A lot of ghoul lovers stepped up to support their boy, and ultimately, by the end of the Super Bowl, Hancock won the whole thing, barely, but he did it. It was wonderful. Some people said, hey, wait, this isn't fair. Other people, you know, didn't have this kind of rallying. And I said, you know what? If the love for these characters were there, they would show the hell up.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Also, it was funny because I reconnected with an old friend. There was someone who had followed Danny as a fan of the Fuxedos. Mm-hmm. And I had lost contact with him for a good 10 years. And it just happened that I saw his name, and I'm like, oh my goodness, blah, blah, blah.
That's
and we reconnected
cool.
because of it. Yeah.
I love that. You know, nothing makes me happier than connecting people, reconnecting people, all of those kinds of things. I mean, that's like one of the biggest things in my community that just makes me so happy, is when we get you know, somebody who comes in from maybe a completely different walk of life or something like that, and then they connect with other folks in the community over, you know, one particular thing or whatever, and then they discover all these other commonalities and become good friends. And it's just like, to watch that happen, I'm just like, it just,
it's wonderful. It's like
warms my heart so much.
A proud mom, you know, a proud aunt, as the case may be.
Yeah, they're all calling me Ghoul Mama right now, so
Ghoul Mama, hot, but you know, who gets to be Ghoul Daddy? Yeah, it's Hancock. You know it.
I may have some explaining to do after that.
Fair enough.
Anyway, thank you again for coming on. This has been so much fun, and I'm definitely looking forward to chatting with you again about maybe some other characters in the future and keeping up with everything that you're doing. Speaking of which, please tell the lovely people
where they can find you
and all the wonderful things you're doing, because you are involved in so many different things, and it's just fantastic.
I appreciate that. It's been such a pleasure to be here with you. I've super enjoyed this Bring Back Dragon Age. You know, I started at the beginning saying, I don't know if I'm the person to talk about it, but no, it had to be me. Couldn't be anybody else.
I'd have gotten it wrong.
Can you again? But no, you can follow me, Jessica Starr. I'm at sleepis4t on the Twitters. At sleepis4t. That stands for sleep is for tortoises, by the way. People often wonder.
Wondering.
Yeah, it's a Doctor Who quote. I'm a Whovian before all else. Well, gotcha. At least within the realm of TV. So at sleepis4t. You can also follow my channel, United Wastelanders Network, at UWastelanders. United Wastelanders Network is a streaming channel on Twitch, and we are essentially a cooperative channel where a bunch of operatives and streamers have come together, and we kind of want to be like a TV network of sorts, a place where you can show up, see different content, different days, different streamers. I mean, our core operatives, there are 10 of us now total, and see your friends. That's the important part for me. I want United Wastelanders Network to be a nexus where if people have an event, they want someone to cover it, we can show up and cover it. And if they have an idea for an event that they want to do and have actually like aired, they can do that too. And in the meanwhile, we do various shows, things like WTF, which Chara was doing as the Wastelanders answer to Jackass, which is wonderful, by the way, daring each other to do ridiculous things in game. You have Rux with Rux Reverse, where he will take one of his amazing builds, this is Rad Rux, and reverse it for you. Everything Camp is kind of our flagship show, and that's where we show off camps, which is my major passion, you know? And so I do that every Thursday at 9. But yeah, you can find us generally Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are when we do our shows, so we don't conflict with a lot of the other streamer schedules on weekends and such, the other people in our crew. We don't want to go every night or too often because, like I said, we're a cooperative. We're there as a place for you to meet and find friends, but also all of our individual members, they stream too. And so we leave room for them. You can also follow my podcasts. I do The Fallout Feed, which is the longest running Fallout podcast and longest winded. some of the other Fallout podcasts will talk about all their listens and downloads. We get there too. But if you're looking for 3 hours of Fallout on a regular basis, yeah, our weekly shows are about 3 hours. They are a little bit too long, but I hope that they're also good and people enjoy it. We have a wonderful community. The basic idea of that show is we discuss the games and news about Fallout, but we do regular seasons where we play through a game. We have random character creators for Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas, Fallout 4, and Fallout 76 that I and Steve have programmed. And Marcus did the original Fallout 4 one before I started doing them. And they're great. They'll give you names, special perks to go for, factions. You want a random character? Try our creators. That's asapodcasting.com. Yeah, check it out. And follow us on Twitter at The Fallout Feed. Finally, I do Dames Who Game podcast, which is a semi-monthly-ish podcast of some of my fellow dames. We have Shalene from That Fallout Show, and We Just Love Games, and myself, and then several other friends from the ASA podcasting family who have guested on the Fallout Feed or Skyrimatic podcast, one of our other shows. And I kind of brought all the girls together. And yeah, we do a show about games. It's a general gaming show, but it's from our perspective, 30, 40 something women who just love games.
Very cool. That's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, and follow me on YouTube, youtube.com/crimslet. C-R-I-M-S-L-E-T. I never advertised that one. Crimslet, why the name? The melding of love and lust. Red and violet.
Ooh, very nice. I love it. I love it.
But no, it's been a pleasure.
I'll put all of those in the show notes too, so there'll be links there so people can find you all over the place. And I can double check that I'm following you on all of those, because I know I'm following you on most of those, but I want to double check and make sure that I've hit all of them.
Thank you, Fire. I super appreciate it. Oh gosh, I really appreciate you and the energy you bring to the community, everything you've done with Fallout 4. I think the final thing we should mention as far as advertising or going is the fact that we've just started the Fallout community team.
Yes.
Which we announced last week. By the time this comes out, we'll probably have had our launch weekend event coming up where we are doing a chair giveaway. Hopefully someone won. Yep. Noble chairs. We are individual channels doing giveaways, a lot of special events, crossover, cooperative streams. And it's so wonderful to have a community team based around Fallout now.
Yeah. So exciting. And thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of that too. That's like an amazing honor. And I was just like, whoa. When I got invited. So
we are super happy to have you. You talking about you was one of the reasons why we said we want to make this about all of Fallout and not just Fallout 76. We want to include amazing people like Firewriter and many of the others who play Fallout 4, play New Vegas. Well, it's so important. You know, obviously the benefits of a team to the streamers are there. I mean, we can network together for content, ideas, assets. Yeah. But for viewers, I think it's super important too. Because we're all plugged into the community, you know, we all have that Fallout enthusiasm, and we made sure to get a diversity of streamers. So you're going to get different people and different views on Fallout, but they all have the enthusiasm. They all have something new to bring, and most of them have finished the content. So now their content is the true end game, which is creating fun in the beautiful sandbox of 76 and the characters we know and love in Fallout 4, 3, New Vegas, even 1 and 2, if you got the time.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting to me because, you know, I've gone most of my life not quite fitting in a lot of ways and not quite finding that community, you know, that I've been looking for. So it's amazing to me that here I am in my mid-40s and I've got the community that I've looked for my entire life. And, you know, you're part of that. And I know.
You're going to get me too, you know, again. I'm edging. You know, I'm edging. I'm going to talk about tears.
Just, you know, from the moment I kind of hit the Fallout community on Twitter, it was just this instant click with so many folks, and it's
like Tahiti. It's a magical place.
It is. It is. Yep. And it makes me so happy, and I feel so lucky, and everything that I've gotten, my life has literally changed and is in the process of changing, and it would not have happened if that community didn't exist. So
I'm glad all these wonderful people in the community can be a small part of that and the catalyst for some of the really positive changes in your life.
Me too. Well, thank you again, and I will let you go. I know I could gush about the community for another hour or so, but
I hear you. I went into full, oh my god, let's talk about how great the community is out there. But no, I love my Fallout fam.
Thank you again, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the Pixel People podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the game and characters discussed, and to connect with me and my guest. Want to be a guest on the show? There's a link in the show notes for a short form you can fill out, and I'll reach out to you. A huge thank you to my patrons, especially my Tier 2 and 3 patrons, Red and Aperture Flash, and thank you to Elias Ali and Andy Brooks, who created the theme music. You can follow the show on Twitter at PixelPeoplePod, and keep up with Firewriter on Twitter, Twitch, and Discord. Enjoying the show? Be sure to subscribe, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd love it if you could leave a review. It helps more people find the show. See you next time.